Hi, I'm Lucy and welcome to Lucy Talks. This podcast is all about finding meaning, self-belief and connection while embracing the seasons of your life. I believe that your happiness matters for the planet. When we are fulfilled and feeling self-confident, we are so much more able to take meaningful action, both in our lives and for social change. I want this podcast to dare you to reimagine your own life and the world we live in, and to feel empowered to make changes. All of this while using the lens of the changing seasons to allow for softness, kindness, and balance. I'm so excited to have you here. Let's get started. Hi everyone, welcome back to Lucy Talks and welcome to the first guest episode of the winter season, which we're currently working through. Today I'm talking to disability advocate, YouTuber, writer and content creator Zara Beth. So hi Zara, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Hi, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So in this season of the podcast, we're talking about the more reflective side of things. We're talking about the being rather than the doing, talking about the importance of rest and listening to yourself. And I just think you're the perfect guest for the podcast in general, but also this theme, because your message is all about self-acceptance and finding what works for you as an individual and kind of building inner confidence from that. So if you want to start by giving us a rundown on who you are, the work that you do, your various hobbies, etc., and the message that you like to put out.
Yeah, so I'm a content creator predominantly. I love doing video and photography and mainly YouTube nowadays. I focus on disability advocacy, but I also absolutely love writing, and my biggest hobbies are writing, gaming as well. I do some streaming, art. I have a little art business that I run that I'm kind of turning into more of a sensory friendly business at the minute. So we're doing like lanyards, fidgets, stuff like that, tailored towards my audience. Yeah. And then I'm writing a book at the minute. I've written the first draft of my book about me, about my life and advocacy, basically my entire story, going through all my health conditions and kind of my advice from what I've learned from that.
Awesome. Honestly, you have so many different hobbies and seem like such a multifaceted person. So it's difficult to know where to begin with this, but let's start with writing. So I first came across your channel while I was traveling, actually, and I was just kind of looking on YouTube, trying to find something that would be nice and restful, nice and relaxing. And I came across your NaNoWriMo vlog and I thought, oh, this is a bit of me. I loved everything you were talking about. And I wondered if you could maybe start there, tell us a little bit about the challenge, what NaNoWriMo is, and in general, what draws you towards writing.
I think I've always loved writing. Like ever since being a little kid, I just loved kind of writing little stories. I think as a bit of an escape, it's kind of like you can just let your imagination go and you can block out all the world. So I first started writing a book, I think when I was about 12 or 13, and I got like 15,000 words in, but then I gave up. I never picked it back up again. And to this day, it's still just in a folder somewhere. And so I think it was about 2021 when I was kind of Googling writing challenges, like how to finish a book when you actually start it. And I came across NaNoWriMo YouTube videos and I was like, ooh, this is cool, because I'm very challenge driven. Like if I have a goal, I'm going to plan and I'm going to get to that goal. Like I'm very structured with how I do things. And so it really suited me. And I found the page. So NaNoWriMo, for people who don't know, is a 30-day writing challenge where you have to write 50,000 words, and that is the baseline for a novel. Anything above 50,000 words is actually considered a book. So yeah, at the end of 30 days, the challenge is to have an entire book like drafted for the first time.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely relate to what you're saying about needing a little bit of a structure and a challenge and having that goal to work towards. In terms of writing in general, how does it help you? Is it a creative process that's really enjoyable? Is it a process to understand your emotions? Is it something that helps you share your perspectives on life? Is it a combination of all three? And if you want to maybe touch upon the book that you have written / are writing on your own experiences, that would be so cool to hear about.
It's kind of different for nonfiction and fiction, because I've actually written the first full complete draft of two books now, because I've completed two NaNoWriMos. And the first one I did was a fiction book. So that was just a novel. It wasn't about me, although it definitely speaks a little bit of my voice. Because I think writing fiction for me, it's quite therapeutic, because I can just be creative with it. Like you can put in magic, you can put in whatever you want. It doesn't have to be realistic. But also I can kind of write about my own experiences without mentioning my own name. Like I can insert little things that I know about and I can feel. So I think it adds a little bit of a personal touch. I guess it's a little bit like journaling in a way, but kind of anonymous. And then with writing nonfiction, my book that I've written recently is my life story, essentially. And so that is literally, it's like therapy. But it's kind of like when I make YouTube videos, I talk about my life and then it gets a little bit inspirational and I give tips. And it's kind of that, but in writing, like very long form. So it's fun. It's quite fulfilling, I think.
Yeah, for me, writing is very similar. I find it really, yeah, therapeutic to get all of the things that are bubbling around in my head down on paper. And somehow, when you then see it on paper, it's suddenly a bit less scary. And
It
that's
makes
definitely,
sense.
yeah, it makes sense. And there's something about it that just thinks, okay, I can tackle this now. Like, I know what I need to do, or I know how I'm feeling. So, yeah, so many benefits to that. So we're actually recording this on World Book Day, and I was wondering if you have any books which have been influential for you, or maybe any authors that have really spoken to your experiences and their words have resonated with you.
I have actually filmed a book day video
Oh,
about
wow.
this. I absolutely love reading kind of disability books, whether it's non-fiction by a disabled author or fiction by a disabled author, which I've recently just gotten into. I really like seeing representation of people. I read a book called Love Letters to Joy recently, which is a fiction book, and it's the first time that I've ever read a book where the main character was disabled. I think the main character had cerebral palsy and she was also asexual. So there was like so much representation, and the author was also disabled. So it's kind of like the author's voice through a fictional story where the main character is disabled, but that isn't their only storyline. Like that's not the only plot or the only thing about them. It's just they happen to be disabled, which is really cool. But I think some books that I would always recommend to people are N My Non-Identical Twin by Evie Meg. That is a brilliant book that talks about Tourette's and FND, which are two conditions I have both of. And Unmasked by Ellie Middleton is a really cool businesswoman. She's also a friend of mine, and she's autistic and ADHD. So that literally taught me so much about neurodiversity, even as an autistic person. Like I learned so much. It gives a really good insight into things and also kind of tells a bit of her story. So there are some really cool recommendations.
Amazing. I'm definitely going to have to add them to my TBR list, which is ever growing by the day. I feel like I'll never get to the bottom of my TBR
Yeah,
list.
no, mine's 100 long.
Yeah. I've even got like a few books up here that I'm like, oh, I can't wait to read that, but there's so many.
There's
Those
not enough
sound,
days in the month.
yeah, there's never enough days. They sound amazing, and totally appreciate what you're saying about representation, not just being about chucking in a token disabled person, token person of color. It's about the character and their experiences, and if you can relate to those, then that adds so much depth and nuance.
It's very validating just to read it
Definitely.
and be like, oh, that's me. It's really nice.
Absolutely. So you mentioned FND and Tourette's there. I wonder if we could maybe talk a little bit about your disabilities and talk about the content that you create online, which is centered around disability advocacy. So, why is this important for you? And if you're happy, maybe you could share a little bit about your experiences living with disabilities as well.
Yeah, so FND and Tourette's are kind of my main conditions as such. I have neurological disabilities. FND, for people who don't know, is functional neurological disorder, which is basically a functioning problem with the brain. FND is usually described as a software problem. So, unlike things like epilepsy, which is a structural, like physical damage problem, FND is a problem with the signals in the brain, where they misfire and they don't fire as they should do. So FND causes things like paralysis, non-epileptic seizures, tremors, dystonia, which is kind of like limb locking where you can't move things and they become rigid. It can cause things like memory loss, fatigue, basically any neurological symptom. When I actually got diagnosed with that, they put me down the stroke pathway to the neurological hospital because that's kind of what it can present like. It's quite a mystery kind of condition. There isn't enough research about it, but recently they've been putting more funding into research and they're finding a lot more things that are actually proving that it's structural, which is really interesting. And my other condition that I advocate a lot for and is one of the main reasons people know me is Tourette's syndrome, which basically causes tics, which are involuntary movements and sounds. And I do have a thing called coprolalia, which is a subcategory of tics that around 10% of people have, which is the swearing. And I think most people hear Tourette's and they're like, "Oh, you swear." Unfortunately, I do, but not everybody with Tourette's does swear. That's one of the main things I try and educate people on because it's a very common misconception.
Thank you for sharing all of that. It's something that I've definitely learned a lot from watching your videos and just hearing your perspectives, because it's one thing reading about like the symptoms of a condition, and it's a totally different thing hearing it firsthand from someone and hearing someone's honest experiences. So I think that's really valuable, and it's a brave thing to share your experiences. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
I wonder if we could maybe like dive a little bit deeper into these if you're happy. So maybe take us back to when your symptoms started presenting and how that came about and how you dealt with that, maybe the changes in your life and how that has changed over time.
Well, Tourette's started when I was much younger, but we didn't know it was Tourette's at the time. The first time we acknowledged and realized that I was having tics was when I was around 7. And I think we did actually go to the GP, but they just said they were anxiety tics. They were probably just childhood tics that would go away, which is common to happen, but in my case, they got worse. And I think I was 14 when it really blew up, for lack of better words. It was, it probably seemed quite sudden to people around me, but I noticed for a lot of months that the main tics that I had were at this point were mainly facial and jaw and neck twitches, and I had a couple of like coughing or grunting type tics that weren't very obvious being tics, so that's why we didn't pick up on them. And those just became more and more frequent to the point where it was causing a lot of pain. And I was getting neck pain for the first time due to my tics. And it was just kind of really confusing because I didn't understand what was happening. And then gradually there were like different ones coming in. So I started whistling. And then when I said my first word, that was kind of a big moment that I was like, oh, this is something different. Like something's happening here. And at the time when my tics were worsening, I was still in high school. So in British high school, a British public high school, developing Tourette's suddenly is quite an experience being around other teenagers, especially when I started to develop swearing tics, because there's a thing called coprolalia, which is repetitive tics, so repeating other people's words and phrases. And things like animal noises or words, or if someone's putting their hand up in class, I'll put my hand up as a tic. A lot of that started happening, and I still didn't have an explanation because I wasn't diagnosed with Tourette's at that point. So I just kind of had to say, yeah, I've got tics. And no one really knew what they were. So it was quite a difficult time, especially because I was quite anxious about what was happening. I was quite embarrassed because I didn't understand it. So I didn't tell my mum for a long time. I kind of tried to hide it all, but as you'll probably know if you've seen anybody with Tourette's, it's very hard to hide it and it's very obvious when tics do come out. So eventually I did kind of tell people, well, I didn't really tell them, they just kind of saw what was happening. My tics started coming out. Hey, fuck. And yeah, we eventually saw the doctor. We had to go back a couple times because the first GP visit we had, it was like, yeah, it's anxiety, you'll be fine. And then we kind of pushed and we were like, no, we think this is something different. Like it's getting worse, it's getting worse. And we eventually saw a neurologist and it took a while. We actually ended up going privately because of the lack of healthcare and like all the waiting lists were years long, and it was getting to quite a critical point. Like we needed answers because my exams were coming up, my GCSEs, and so I needed like exam regulations and stuff. So we ended up going privately, and I finally got a diagnosis. And I also got diagnosed with OCD at that point, because they're very common to have together as comorbid conditions. And then with my FND, that started around 2020, maybe late 2019, I think. And that pretty much started with seizures. It was quite a weird thing to develop because with the thing is with seizures, you don't really know what's going on. You don't understand what's happening because during a seizure, you're unconscious, even if you look awake and you're not like physically on the floor asleep. You're not there. You're not conscious in yourself, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I didn't really know what was happening and I didn't notice for a while. I just knew that I was having these weird periods where I was out of it and didn't remember what was happening. And so I started filming it to see what was happening. And I was like, oh, this looks a bit strange. And yeah. That eventually came out. I started having them in front of people. I was dropping at school, and that progressed quite rapidly, especially after COVID came out and stuff, because the stress that COVID put on so many people definitely had a big impact on me. I moved house at the time as well, and I had a friendship breakup at the time, so and exams. So all of that at one point kind of worsened everything, and I think the stress really impacted. And with FND, if you're stressed, it physically kind of exacerbates symptoms. So yeah, that was a rough couple of months. People didn't really understand. But FND took about 2 years to get diagnosed from when my symptoms started. So it was undiagnosed and kind of just struggling without knowing what's happening for like a very long time, considering I was dropping having seizures.
Exactly. It's not like it's you're getting headaches every now and then. It's
Yeah,
pretty severe symptoms.
I think COVID definitely had an impact on how quickly, or well, the lack of how quickly people were rushed in. It was very hard to get healthcare. It still is, but it was definitely worse back then. You just couldn't get an appointment, even if you're like on your deathbed. So yeah, it was a weird time.
Challenging, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And going back to what you said about the anxiety around school and developing tics at that point, like school's hard enough with all of the, hormones and friendship breakups and
Yeah,
everything
you
going
throw
on
in a bit of
without,
bullying.
yeah, exactly, without like everything else. So kudos to you for getting yourself through that.
Just about survived.
Yeah, I know that you've mentioned in your videos that since leaving college, your symptoms have like improved slightly. And I wonder if you want to, you've touched on it slightly, but how does stress impact your daily life and how does that impact your conditions? And also within that, how do you kind of build in this time to rest and look after yourself? And what's the importance of that to you?
It's a constant thing that I'm working on. I think
Me too.
it's really hard to find a balance between doing things and enjoying things and, achieving what you want to, and looking after yourself and looking after your body and listening to your cues. I think as somebody with a chronic illness or someone who's disabled, it is really difficult to listen to your body because your body can't do as much as, quote, other people can. A non-disabled person can generally do a lot more in a day. They can kind of achieve more, so they get further with things. They can enjoy more things because they have the energy to. So it's a really hard thing to accept that you're chronically ill or you're disabled and that you can't do as much as you want to. So it's very difficult to manage what you're doing, especially when I was in college or when I was in school, especially. It's very difficult to not burn yourself out and not exacerbate your symptoms because doing the basic school, like doing the basic days, is too much in itself. And so if you add on top of that, like socializing or, anything else in life that you kind of need to keep sane, you're really pushing yourself over the limit. So yeah, definitely since leaving college, I finished. I did get my grades. I did it. Got my head down.
Awesome.
I had to cut everything out to do that. I don't want it to sound like it was easy. It definitely wasn't. It was the worst years of my life, unfortunately. But I kind of just cut everything out. I didn't even have friends at the time. Sounds really sad to say that, but I literally had to just work and sleep. That was all I did. I work, slept, and had seizures.
Bless you.
Yeah, that was what my life consisted of for a couple of months. But it got me through. And I have to say, when I left and got my grades, got out, I immediately felt a massive weight lift off me because I could wake up in the day and I didn't have to go to this overstimulating place that caused me loads of symptoms. And it was just stressful because even when I was trying to do the work, I couldn't because physically I either wasn't there, I like wasn't conscious, or I was struggling, or I was too tired, or I was overstimulated, like with my autism. So I never really got the work done. Just felt like consistently like failing to keep up, which is really exhausting. So when I finished and left that, and I didn't have all that weight, I didn't have to kind of do anything. Yeah, it was really nice. It was kind of hard to adjust to though, because I finished and suddenly this massive stress that I'd had for 2 years wasn't there. And I woke up the next day after finishing and I was like, okay, what do I do? It's like the world is there. Hey.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think people do really underestimate the impact that school has on anyone who's neurodivergent or disabled. It's a really hard system to be in, and it really doesn't support many people who work differently. It's kind of fit for one type of person predominantly,
Yeah, there's
which
a
wasn't
mold.
me. There's a mold, and there's a lot of us who don't fit into it, and we're just forced to kind of survive it when, we should be enjoying it, really. We should be able to succeed well. But what I've found since leaving is that I'm now learning what actually does suit me because I have the time to. I can organize my time how I like. Luckily, well, I mean, this is my job, not doing podcasts, but yeah, content creation and my art and my music, things like that are my job. So I'm kind of a business owner, entrepreneur, if you will. Yeah, organizing my own time and having a flexible working schedule, and a cut down working schedule. I cannot work full time. I think I would go straight back into having seizures all day every day if I did do that. So that's a reality that I've kind of had to settle into after leaving, is just organizing my own time in a way that gives me enough time to rest, just scheduling that in.
Yeah, and that's such a like act of kindness for yourself, because you could try and push yourself to do more and more and think, okay, I've got to do this XYZ, but knowing your boundaries, knowing this is my limit, and I guess accepting that as well might sound like you're trying to hold yourself back, but I actually think is really freeing and something that you've then enabled yourself to enjoy everything you do rather than making it an effort, making it, not saying it isn't an effort, but like making yourself
Yeah.
push through it.
It's almost harder to make yourself rest than to make yourself do things. I think it's a real struggle to not do things.
Yeah, I totally
Well,
relate to
that might just be me, but
that.
I'm a doing person with a not doing amount of energy. So it's a constant struggle to hold yourself back enough so that you can do well when you do things.
Yeah, I think this is why I'm asking you, because from your videos, it seems like you seem to have somewhat of a good grasp on this. And I'm like, I don't know how to do this. So
I'm glad
it's
it comes
probably why
across
I'm
that
asking.
way. Yeah, I'm still trying, but I mean, journaling helps because I have like five bullet journals.
Nice.
I schedule everything. Not to keep myself accountable for doing things, but so that I can see how much I'm doing. Because it often feels like I'm not doing anything. I don't give myself enough credit for actually doing tasks. So I'm like, oh, I need to do more. I need to do more. I'm not doing enough. And then I burn myself out. So something that I do is I write down every single task I'm doing so that I can look at it and go, I have done a lot today. Okay, we can rest now.
Awesome. That sounds really good. Thank you for that tip. So you also mentioned your autism diagnosis, and I know that this has been a fairly recent thing in your life, so congratulations on that. And I wonder if you could touch on how realizing you're autistic has impacted your life, things that it's made you realize about yourself, and the process of maybe sharing that with other people as well.
It has changed my life. It's changed a lot of things. Well, it hasn't changed them necessarily. It's just revealed a lot. I kind of realized I was autistic quite a while before my diagnosis. I think it was about 2 years ago. Pretty much the start of college, I think, was when I started to get the penny dropping a little bit, but I didn't admit it. I didn't say that I was autistic or anything. But I started researching, and I think that was around the time that I found a lot of people on social media that were kind of in the neurodiversity community. And I started discovering autistic women and them talking about how differently they present.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so this is how autism can look? What? Yeah, because I didn't really have a very good understanding before. I just kind of had a baseline knowledge of what it was. But yeah, I think definitely doing research just made me look over my entire life and like pull out so many things that I hadn't realized could be related. And it kind of made me rethink all the things I'd struggled with, because I think I blame myself. I used to blame myself a lot for all the things I struggled with because I didn't understand why. I was like, oh, I'm just crap at friendships. Oh, I just can't go to parties. I'm just boring. When all of a sudden there was kind of the possibility of all that being explained, like there was an answer. So yeah, I think about a year ago when I started applying for an official diagnosis through the NHS, that was when I was like, okay, I think I'm autistic. And I kind of had the self-acceptance starting, even though I didn't talk about it publicly. I didn't really tell anybody. It was just me and my immediate family and friends, who all kind of guessed I was autistic anyway. They were all like, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, I think that's why self-diagnosis, although it's not widely accepted like in healthcare, self-diagnosis is really accepted within the autistic community because of the lack of healthcare.
Yeah.
And yeah, my diagnosis was quite difficult because the actual diagnosis was great, but the process took a long time because I had to wait months on the NHS waiting lists. I did the developmental, went through the forms, and then I got a letter back saying that the services had closed in my area. There was no adult autism or ADHD services,
Wonderful.
so good luck, basically. And I couldn't apply anywhere else because I'd already been through my area. So I couldn't go through the NHS anymore, basically. So I ended up going privately and had a really positive experience, and it was great. It was really quick. Obviously, I did have to pay, which is the downside of private healthcare, but I felt like it was really well done. And the person that I had, the psychologist, was an FND, an autism specialist who specialized in women. And I was like,
Amazing.
cool.
That's everything you need.
That call explained my entire life. Literally, it linked everything together. She taught me things I didn't know about FND, and I was like, wow, this really makes sense. And I th the official diagnosis was very validating for me because I think as somebody who posts online and has quite a large presence and like an audience, I feel a big sense of having to have backing, if that makes sense. I definitely felt like I needed the written paperwork, if I was going to be sharing and advocating to people, because I do doubt myself.
For sure. And then if
I'm
you're putting that
confident
out
enough.
there, you're getting comments back, that little bit of
Yeah,
self-doubt is has the
I
potential
feel
to
like
then snowball. So, yeah.
it would have eaten away at me that people would be like, well, where's your diagnosis? And if I didn't have one, I would feel like a bit like an imposter. But I think in terms of just me accepting myself and changing, like starting to accommodate for my needs in daily life, if it wasn't for the internet and the advocacy, I think just the self-diagnosis and like the accepting that I was autistic even before my diagnosis, I think that was just validating enough. That definitely changed a lot because I'd already adapted so much before I got my diagnosis that when they said, "Yeah, you're autistic," I was like, "Okay, cool, that's just validation." Like I already knew. I knew in my heart, I knew in my brain. I knew myself, so it was already kind of confirmed in my head.
Absolutely.
I
And
think it's
that,
quite easy to know because
yeah.
you live in your brain.
Yeah. And
Like
especially
you
when you
know.
start listening to other people's experiences and you think, well, that definitely matches how I experience things, or she speaks just like me, or things like that. It's really, that's almost all the proof you need in a way, because if they're autistic and you really relate to that, and quite often other people who aren't autistic will think, that doesn't make sense to me at all. I don't understand how you think like that. That kind of Venn diagram, if you will, makes it make sense in my head as
It
to like,
does.
yeah, categorizing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think going to an event, I went to Ellie Mid's book launch of
Awesome.
Unmasked, and it was a room full of autistic and ADHD people. It was a room full of neurodivergent women, predominantly, and they all were like me.
Yeah.
That was, but before that event, I hadn't told any, I hadn't like said I was autistic. Like me and my family were like, okay, autism explains everything, but I'd never like worn a pin badge that says I'm autistic. Like I didn't feel validated to present it to people.
Yeah.
And that event, every single person there validated me. And I was telling them about like my lack of diagnosis and how like I was discovering all of this. And they were like, you're not diagnosed autistic.
Yeah.
I was like, no. They're like, yeah, you're valid, dude. And they were so lovely and welcoming. And like most of the autistic community, pretty much all of it that I've interacted with, is so lovely and so validating and so accepting. And they just get it. And it's so nice to have that little side of the internet, or like even in person now. It's so nice to have people that do understand like how you've felt your entire life, and they can just kind of
Yeah,
validate it. It's
that's the
cool.
power of the internet, is being able to connect with people that you really relate to, that you can be friends with, that understand what you're going through. That's, yeah, such a great thing. And I think putting yourself out there as you do is opening yourself up to all of those people being able to come into your life, because if you were trying to pretend to be someone else, then you'd never have access to all of those amazing people that are out there. So, yeah, it's just like, again, like more confirmation of how important it is to be yourself and let those people who do understand what you're going through be able to find you. So, as you mentioned, the differences between how autism presents in boys and men, and then women and girls, is quite different. And typically, the stereotype of someone with autism is this like maybe young boy, and they're maybe having like temper tantrums and can't communicate with anyone, not making eye contact. And that is definitely a valid portrayal of autism for sure, but there's also different types, and autism is such a spectrum. And I wondered if we could touch on how autism presents differently in women and girls, and I guess like your experiences of, yeah, those autistic traits showing up in you.
I think something that I'm still trying to like advocate for, even in like my personal life, is the fact that women who appear successful and can have friendships and have highly masked so much their entire lives, they can be autistic. I think this is definitely something that comes up with older generations specifically, because they're not used to all the labels. They're kind of obviously newer discoveries. So women present very differently to men. Well, girls and boys, especially in school. So autistic girls have been like proven to mask more. So an autistic boy might be very outwardly struggling. It might come up in their behavior. As you said, like meltdowns and maybe aggressive behavior or verbal shutdowns, whereas girls tend to internalize it more. I know definitely from my childhood, it presented a lot as anxiety. Like, I was a very anxious and actually quite depressed kid at times. And it came up with pickiness, and I struggled with clothing. And it was very much the sensory issues side of things, which isn't so much picked up on. It's just kind of you're labeled as a bit fussy, a bit anxious, and then you're sent off on your way. And then I think as autistic girls grow up undiagnosed, I think in high school it really presents more in the friendships, and that's where definitely in my case it became very, very obvious that I didn't quite fit in with everybody. But I kind of had so much masking going on and so much awareness of the fact that I was different that I just hid it all. So I tried to make myself fit in with people. I just kind of followed what everyone else did. And so I was never really being myself. So if I'd just done exactly what my brain wanted to do and there was no masking there, someone probably would have picked up on it, because I might have had outward meltdowns. I might have, had bad behavior because I couldn't cope, or I wouldn't have had any friends probably. So I think people just don't validate things that they can't immediately see, like if it isn't very obvious. I know in a post I did recently, I posted the other day, I was looking at comments last night, and it has clearly got on the wrong side of the internet, because it is a lot of men commenting that because I'm not nonverbal and struggling and, quote, I don't look like this person that's autistic, or I don't look like this child, this young boy that is autistic. You don't look like them, so you're not autistic. Just shut up. And that is such a common attitude towards autistic women, just because they don't look like the presentation that people are used to. And it's really frustrating. It definitely reminds me of the labels high functioning and low functioning. People often use low functioning for like the very, quote, obviously autistic boys, and then high functioning for the women who seem to have it all put together. They seem to be coping fine. But those labels, as autistic people have said, really don't represent the actual autistic experience. I think it is much more validating to use high masking and low masking, because just because you present like you're capable, like you can do things, like you're not struggling and like you can fit in, just because that's what you see, isn't that doesn't mean that's what's on the inside. I know definitely in my case, I can come across very socially capable. I can come across like I don't struggle with communication, like I don't struggle with clothing or textures or food or whatever it might be. It isn't really obvious to anyone that walks by. Like you wouldn't look at me and think, yeah, she's autistic, because you can't see inside struggles.
For sure. And they're not seeing the potential meltdowns going on later on when you've pushed yourself too much, when the masking becomes so overwhelming that you end up, burning yourself out. Those sorts of things tend to go on behind closed doors. And I guess because of the way that women and girls have been socialized, you can kind of get by if, but depending on like your where you are on the spectrum, but you could get by if you wanted to by masking. And it can be useful, I guess, in some situations to mask, but then the stress of doing so, the anxiety, the overwhelm is still a valid symptom. It's just
It
maybe
is.
delayed later on.
It's also really detrimental for autistic girls to go without a diagnosis and grow up masking more and more and more, because then it just internally teaches us and them that they shouldn't be themselves and they shouldn't present any of their autistic traits. It subconsciously teaches them all that, we shouldn't feel this way, or you shouldn't be allowed to struggle. You shouldn't be allowed to show, it's not a weakness, but show, struggling. Yeah, it's really annoying that autistic women aren't diagnosed earlier. It's so common for us to be late diagnosed. I was diagnosed at 18, which is still late diagnosed. I was still an adult, but there are so many autistic women that are getting diagnosed at like 40, 50, 60 years old.
Absolutely.
It's crazy that they've gone their entire life without an explanation as to why they feel different or why they're struggling, just because they didn't outwardly like have a meltdown or, offend somebody, or they
Yeah.
didn't do anything too out there. They masked so hard that everyone ignored their struggles.
For sure. And often it's that time of life when maybe those women are having children of their own, and those children might be autistic, and then it comes out that they are autistic because they realize similarities. And it shouldn't be like that. So I think that's why I think this conversation is so important, and kind of need to like update that stereotype of what an autistic person can look like, and also changing this narrative of that you need to be struggling in order to be autistic. Like you can't then be seen to be doing really well, and they think, okay, well then hang on a minute, you can't be autistic because you're actually doing pretty well in your life.
I think it's the underlying expectation that autistic people aren't capable. I think people definitely look down on the term autism. And as soon as you throw autistic into there, people start patronizing you. People start talking to you like you're a baby and like you don't understand things. Everybody is different. And that is the same for autistic people. Autistic people aren't the same person. They're all still individual people with individual traits. They just happen to be autistic too.
For sure. 100% agree. I feel like we could talk about this for ever and ever. So I'll move on. But I could honestly talk to you about this for a while. So let's talk about your YouTube channel and creative hobbies, because you're very successful on your YouTube channel and it deserves a
Thank you.
bit of credit. So you have over 400,000 subscribers, which is incredible. So talk to me a bit about how you started your channel and why you wanted to start it, and also how it's grown as you've grown up as well.
So all my channels pretty much started with TikTok. That's where everything links back to. TikTok was the first place I started posting, and I originally started posting like publicly because I wanted to tell people that I had Tourette's back in high school when it was all coming out and I didn't have my diagnosis. I needed to tell people that I had tics because I was going into school and nobody knew what was going on. Like I was all of a sudden meowing all the time and whistling, and people just didn't understand it. So I started making short videos to kind of introduce it, because I think I had 200 followers back in 2020, which is
Grown a lot
crazy.
then.
Yeah, in 2020 I had 200 followers, which were basically just my year at school. It was everybody that I knew in person, and I started posting to them being like, this is what tics are, this is what I do now, and I started educating those, and it started, picking up traction. Other people were seeing it and they were really interested. And then my first video went viral and got a couple million views. And I was like, whoa, this is a lot of people. It was absolutely crazy to me back
Wow.
then. It still is crazy, but the COVID test video is still the biggest video that I've had. It still scares me to think of the amount of people who have seen that.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. It's about to hit 100 million, I think, views.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, which is like scary.
Oh, that's crazy.
Terrifying. Yeah, but I started posting about my Tourette's and advocacy, and as more people asked questions, I started to answer more questions and educate them, and I found that people didn't know anything about Tourette's. Like no one knew that people knew the name and that was about it. So I'd started finding a passion for talking about the facts, and I started doing so much research, and as I got my diagnosis as well, I started researching even more and I read all the facts. And then gradually, as that built up and I started doing it daily and like it grew over the years, and I continued doing it and doing more collabs, and I started getting interviews, and it was becoming more of like a job, I suppose. That was when I decided that YouTube could be cool, because I'd always wanted to be a YouTuber since I was
Yeah.
like five, since
Oh.
YouTube was a thing. I used to make little gaming videos in my bedroom when I was like 10, and here I am at 18 actually doing that. It's my job. But yeah, YouTube's definitely more of a community. I like the long form. You can just get a lot more into the videos, and it's much more of a community because people have to sit down and fully watch the video. So you get to know people a lot more. Whereas TikTok, people can just randomly scroll and find your 20-second video. I definitely feel like you can connect with people more in long form content. So
Definitely.
it's been really nice.
That's lovely. Yeah. And there's so much more nuance that you can get across. You've got people's attention for a bit longer. You're not needing to simplify things as much. So, yeah, absolutely. I think there's huge value in making time for the things that you love to do. And I know that you've got loads of different hobbies, which we won't have time to get into. But I wanted to ask you, what do you think would be your advice for someone who wants to start something new, wants to start a new hobby, or has an interest that they're maybe like scared of pursuing or don't have the confidence to start? So, what would be your advice for someone in that situation?
I guess it depends on the hobby. I think my general idea around hobbies, well, I have too many hobbies. If that's even a thing, I think I've hit it. I think just do what you enjoy. And if something, like Marie Kondo says, if something sparks joy, then that's what you should be doing. So for me, if something isn't sparking joy, if something isn't doing it for me, then I just do less of it. So sometimes even my hobbies I don't enjoy as much if I put pressure on myself. If you force yourself to do something, you're like, you should be doing that, chances are you're not going to like it anymore. So I just do things as and when I feel like doing it, when the inspiration strikes. Art is something that, I mean, it's a very common hobby. Loads of people love art, but it's something that I've loved since I was like three. All my life I've loved doing art, but my advice is just not to put pressure on yourself to do it every day or continue doing it or succeed or make it into a job. Just do it because you love it, and it doesn't matter that other people are judging you, or you don't have to impress anybody. Hobbies aren't for show. It's for you to enjoy and like pursue being creative. Do what you enjoy.
Yeah, I love that. I think I definitely fall prey to the shoulds all the time. So yeah, I appreciate that. That's good.
Even I do sometimes.
Yeah. So I've got a few closing questions for you. So each week I like to think about some things that I'm grateful for and share those on the podcast because gratitude is overlooked and is really important. So I wonder if you could tell me three things that you've been grateful for today or this week or this month, whatever you fancy, really.
I'm definitely grateful this week for physical health because I've been ill recently, and so when you're chronically ill, like when you have a disability, illness really kicks your butt. It really takes it out of you. And so this week I've been feeling better. I went to my gymnastics class, I went to my yoga class, I've been able to do the things that I love and get back into it, so I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for my best friends and the people around me, for all their support and for people making me smile, even like on hard days. And for falling back in love with my hobbies again, speaking on hobbies, because I've fallen back in love with art recently, which I haven't done properly since I had to do it for exams. It sucked the life out of it. And recently I've been drawing loads, I've been sketching, I've had loads of inspiration. Just been trusting the process. So I'm grateful for the headspace in order to do that.
That's so nice. Thank you for sharing those. What's your biggest goal for the year? What would be one thing that, if I could say it's the end of this year, it's the end of 2024, and you have completed this, you've achieved this thing, what would that be?
Probably my book. I think
Awesome.
that's probably my biggest like long-term project at the minute. I can't wait to get it out to the world and have it physically in my hands, like a thing that I did. That, and then just creating and refining like the community, creating a safe space for people.
That's so lovely. And finally, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Whoa.
This is a big question. I love
This is a
asking this
big
to people.
question. Probably just to slow down and just let yourself be. Just don't put pressure on yourself to be anything. Like, don't put pressure to find out who you are or what you want to do, or you don't have to find out anything about your life. You can just slow down and just appreciate what you do have in the moment. Just appreciate what's around you, like look around you, look at the things, enjoy whatever day it is. Just it puts into perspective what you need, and that's what allowed me to like really sink into my identity and unmasking and figuring out what adaptations I needed. Yeah, just allow yourself to be whatever that may be.
That's perfect. But like that ties in so nicely with what we were talking about at the start with the winter theme of the podcast going on at the moment. So yeah, amazing. And I'm so happy that you're going through that unmasking process and finding out how to make everything work for you. So that's amazing. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
much, Zara, for
You're
coming on
welcome.
the podcast. I've loved this conversation, and I hope that everyone listening has also taken a lot away from it and really enjoyed listening to your perspectives. So, for anyone who wants to find your content, where can they go and learn more?
It's just Sarah Beth on YouTube, just my name. And then Instagram, Sarah.BethX. I really need to change that username. And then ZZ25 on TikTok is my original account. But yeah, if you search that, I also have a website that has a community. I have a Discord server, which is just a safe space for all like neurodivergent, disabled, queer people. It's just a nice place to make friends, and we have a little shop going, and we do some events. So yeah, we've got a nice little corner of the internet.
That sounds so lovely. Okay, thank you so much, Zara. Have a lovely rest of your day, and thank you everyone for listening. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.